From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 20th, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, you know who Mamacita is?
I've heard the name, but no, I do not know who Mamacita is.
Well, her real name is Vanessa Alvarez, and she's really popular on like Live at the Bike, and she's got a lot of success in L.A. She's a real good high-stakes poker player, and I've heard of her before. When I used to watch Live at the Bike, I saw her a couple of times, and I don't know if you know this or not, but she's well-endowed. She's, like, plays at the table like that, where she's, you know, showing cleavage and everything, and
tell me more.
So I'm like, the other day I'm on Facebook and here comes this ad for a poker video game. And I won't say the name of the game because we're not getting paid by them for this. So somebody wants to go find it, they can. And she's across the table from you. And it's her. It's not a, you know, avatar of her. I mean, it's her. And of course, she's got her, you know, endowedness overflowing.
Her money makers.
Yes, yep. they're overflowing, bubbling out of her outfit. And so you have, like, I don't know, pocket kings and whatever she has, and then you get quads, and she goes all in. And then, of course, the person calls, and she loses. And then up on the screen has two buttons. It says chips or strip.
What kind of games are you playing?
This, I'm not playing them. This is the ad. It's the ad that's, you know how the, if you're scrolling through Facebook, the videos will play automatically, you know? So it's an ad.
You have access to what your browsing history is, so you don't have to lie to us about
it. No, it's absolutely true. It's, I'm browsing it all. I have the app, too. I don't even have the platform. And I'm like, so I click on the thing that says, you know, hey, this ad is offensive. Don't send me this ad anymore. Last thing you want is, you know,
send it to my business partner instead, please.
You don't want your missus rolling over and seeing that on your iPad when you're in bed at night. I'm like, this is not cool. I don't want to see this ad. So after like five or six times requesting them to eliminate this ad from my feed,
they just give you the app for free.
The ad is gone. So like a couple of days later, here comes the video game again. But now it's not her. It's a woman in like lingerie, bra, and panties, thong.
Oh, I wish it was going to be a guy. That would have been the awesome.
No, no, I know. That would have been funny. But it's not a guy. So this woman walks across the like poker room, but it's an avatar. It's an animation. And she ends up being the dealer. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? So then I go to like just kill the ad, but it jumps to gameplay. And now there's a woman across from you, but now she's the avatar, and it's not Mamacita, she's some woman, but her clothes are painted on her. I mean, and of course, she's well endowed. Yeah, when she's raking in the pot, you know, they're bouncing around and bubbling around. And I'm like, okay, so this is the question I have for you. This is why I brought it up. All right, you know how we're always talking about what gives poker a black eye? Is this giving poker a black eye too, or is this giving the video game industry a black eye, or is it just, you know, common denominator crap that they're catering to, and we just all have to suffer through it on our feeds?
This is probably giving poker a black eye in Utah and Chris Cosenza's house. Other than that,
I'm not a prude. It's just, come on.
Is, you know, anytime anybody says I'm not a whatever, that's what they are saying because they are that. So. Yeah, I'm going to have to say you're just going to have to, like, live and let live with this, Chris. You may have to put the phone down for a couple days.
The funny thing is, though, is
just the world we work
like,
in.
Right after I got this ad to stop, then all of a sudden my feed got filled with, hey, Asian women really like to make the first move on older men.
The computer's just trying to figure out what you want, Chris.
I know.
What you want. Then you would be happy.
So then I clicked on that to say, hey, stop sending me this ad. But then I saw an entry that said, why am I getting this ad? And so I clicked on it and it said, this advertiser is looking for men over 40. So I'm like, damn it. So now I had to like go in and get my birthday off there. And I didn't want anybody to see any of that. So it's remarkable the stuff they'll send you You know, so obviously my connection to Annie Up is why I'm getting these poker ads. And then, but I don't understand the, so then older than 40, you know, it's like, I got to put in the details that I, for the ads that I want, because I don't want any ads, you know.
Well, I can't imagine what ads you're going to get now that you have no age, so.
No age.
Off on a 15-minute thing at 7 a.m. my time about purple unicorns being your phone. I'm going to hire somebody to kill you, because I can't kill you myself.
Oh, so you're in California now? What's going on out there?
Yes, once again, I woke up super early to entertain the Annie Up Nation. And by wake up super early, this is amazing. I had a very long day yesterday, which will be the last part of this opening spiel here. So I set my alarm on my phone. I should have set it on the nice little Bose speaker alarm thing here, because that probably would have gone off loud enough for me to hear, right?
Yeah.
But I literally rolled over and I looked at the clock and it was 6:44, 1 minute before I set my alarm. And I'm like, wow, am I a professional, Chris, that I can just mind myself awake at the appointed time for the podcast? And I get up and I'm like, nope, the clock is like 2 minutes slow. My alarm's going off. My going off, it's just like the phone is all like in purple and stuff. There's no sound coming out.
Right, right.
So I still figured that out. I, you know, maybe once you get your under 40 ads, maybe they'll teach me how to use my alarm on my phone so I can actually hear it without being woken up all night with dings of notifications.
You got the Kramer internal clock going on there.
Yes, yeah. So anyhow, so I'm super happy that I woke up on cue without any cues from a very long day yesterday. But anyhow, yes, I am out here in California at my favorite place in the world, Thunder Valley Casino Resort. I just got to tell you, Chris, a couple of things that are amazing. One, it's been 2 years since I've been out here. Obviously, we had to cancel our event last year because of COVID. Not only did we cancel our event last year, but I was also supposed to be a Thunder Buddy last year, 2 weeks after COVID started. Because they do this big Thunder Buddy thing out here where he gets Matt Savage and a bunch of other people out here. They pay your way out here and they have a big party during the WPT event. I was supposed to be a Thunder Buddy last year, Chris. And it got canceled. So I missed that trip as well, too. So it's very, very nice to be back here. It feels like back, like nothing's changed other than half the people are wearing masks. But other than that, it feels great to be back here. And and I've texted you throughout the week, I have never seen a poker series like this before outside of the World Series of Poker. And you can't compare it to the World Series of Poker because that's just the World Series of Poker, right?
Yeah.
The number of people that have been playing every single event who have been here trying to get on the cash game list, it is just hilarious. And I won't even use the analogy that I used the other day with our good friend Ben Irwin, the director of poker here. But I literally walked in the room on, I got in late, like on a Saturday night, came in, checked in with them, and it was busy then, but it was late at night. Right. And then, so I came in the next morning for the first time and I've never seen this room that full. And they have every table going like they normally do. But people were like finding every square inch of carpet that they could put their butt cheek on waiting for a table or waiting in the tournament. So, almost every tournament has set a record for Thunder Valley here, and I can't even imagine what's going to happen with this main event at the end of the month. So it's been very, very, very happy on all kinds of ways being out here. So
that's great.
If you're out there listening and within distance of getting to Sacramento, please come out because this is going to be something that people are going to be talking about for a long time, I think. So
awesome.
Now, of course, I almost didn't make it here. And we know that. I'll pause for us all to go, yeah, I know Scott. So I'm going to give you the short version because you guys have heard too many versions of me not being able to make it to Thunder Valley. But I just think it's funny because when we were interviewing Ben last week, we even made that joke, right? I'm like, I'm like, I've been stranded in Pittsburgh. I've been stranded in Phoenix. I've been stranded in I don't know where else. And so I woke up the morning of my flight and realized that my flight was delayed to the point that I was going to miss my connection in Salt Lake City. And I'm like, I can live in Pittsburgh. I can live in Phoenix, but I'm not going to spend a night in Salt Lake City unless O'Malley comes over and say hi to me. Right. So,
you can't even play with Mamacita there. I mean,
so I called Southwest right away to proactively fix this. They had plenty of other flights I can get on, so I'm like, no big deal. When I called them, apparently they had already put me on a different flight. If anybody's ever flown Southwest, and I don't know if you have, Chris, the flight they put me on was an 8-hour, 45-minute, two-stop, no plane change flight.
Oh, wow.
I watched Con Air on the hotel TV last night, and I would rather be on that
flight. Oh, man.
So I had to call them back and to change it, and they're like, oh, well, we've got a pretty good connection out of Salt Lake City. They'll get you there at whatever. I'm like, well, that was my original flight. It's delayed. I'm sorry you can't book. No, it's not delayed anymore. It's fine now. I'm like, what? So they rebooked me on that flight, of course, losing my boarding position. So that's the way that I get to the airport, and of course, my flight is delayed again. But fortunately, the flight, my connecting flight, was delayed a little bit more. So I made it here. It was a lot of stress, but I made it here. So
that was the short version?
Yeah, that was the short version.
Okay.
I left out all the crying kids and sneezing passengers.
Excellent.
And the lack of alcohol on the flight. Yeah,
that's what long version.
But now you get the full version because you mocked me. So. all right. So anyhow, the Annie at NorCal Classic, which was the big, that wasn't the kickoff event, but the big first weekend event, $100,000 guarantee. They attracted 392 entries for a $352,800 prize pool, Chris. So while I was stranded and I was trying to let Ben know that I might not make it, I asked him, hey, how do we get to NorCal? And he sent me the picture of the Bravo board, and I'm like, 3.5 times the guarantee is all you could do without me? So that was a fantastic start. That's really got everything going off on this. And then the next day when I walked in, when I mentioned that the room was packed, event three was going off. This is a standard no limit event on a Sunday. They seated, Chris, 241 alternates.
Oh, man.
Nearly 500 players. They actually seated more alternates than they did the amount of people that they could initially get in the tournament when cards were in the air.
Wow, that's insane.
So a couple things about this. One, that's just an amazing number of alternates. Two, the fact that they got them all in, except for maybe a couple, I think I heard. But they get them all in was amazing. A couple of our friends from the cruise were here. And when I found them in the room, they were alternates 192 and 193. And I'm like, are you going to get in? They're like, yeah, we're going to be here. They actually even had time to take me to the grocery store so I could stock out my mini fridge while they're waiting to get in, which was awesome. It worked out for them. They did get in, and one of them cashed too, so that was fantastic. Excellent. But they got in, like, I think it was like 5-6 hours after the event started. They finally got their seat. But wow. Kudos to Ben and everybody here, Jordan Cutter, everybody running this event, to get everybody in that event. So the one lesson we're going to give everybody as we go through the rest of this is if you're coming for these weekend events, you can pre-register up to 24 hours in advance, and you're going to want to do that because if you show up Phil Helmuth style, you're probably not going to play. And if you show up on time like Scott Long, you might have to wait to get in. So definitely get early and buy your seat in advance. Like I said, it was an entire week of records here. The Limit Omaha on Monday was the largest Omaha 8 event in Thunder Valley history with 186 entries. And I'll talk about my play here a little bit later. But I really wanted to win that one because every event I win out here is 40, 60 players. And the first thing my business partner says is, oh, nice job winning against 40 people.
Way to win that turbo.
Yeah, I wanted to win one with 186 with, like, I think it was like $14,000, $15,000 on top just so I could keep you from that joy.
Yeah.
But alas, it did not work.
Instead,
out.
It only solidified my joy that you can't win a big event, a real event. You have to win small, piddly ones.
There's an amazing turnout. And then they got a 15:30 Omaha game going in the middle of that, which is the biggest Omaha cash game they've ever had here. And so that was nice to see them.
Just fantastic news.
Yesterday was the horse event. Our good friend Matt Savage finished 6th and Karina Jett finished 11th. So that was pretty cool to see the number of well-known people in that field, which, of course, is the reason I did not cash. But more on that later. Yesterday in the evening was the first of the 4 flights of the Monolith, this weekend's big multi-day buy-in event or a multi-day flight event. And 230 players in the first one on a Wednesday night. I can only imagine the number of people are going to be here Friday and Saturday to get in this thing and how long they're going to have to wait to get in. So this is going to be a monster field with a really nice payout for a 410 buy-in, something like that, 460 buy-in.
Wow.
So if you're interested in playing that, that's going to be a massive prize pool. I would get down and play that tonight. Or at least get down tonight and register for Friday. And you can register for all 4 flights if you want. and your best bag moves forward. And if you advance more than one bag, you get a big cash for the bags that you forfeit. So lots of reasons to keep swinging for the fences. And I will take a second swing at the fence today, I think. So we'll find out later.
Awesome.
And, of course, and then that catches you up on the play here, but it's been such a fun time being back here. We had a fantastic birthday dinner for Karina Jett a couple nights ago at High Stakes Steakhouse. Ben always does a good job of putting together people for dinner there, but I think we all told him that he outdid himself with the group he put together on Sunday night of folks that friends are here at Thunder Valley, folks that around the poker world, the people who know. We just had a fantastic time eating steak and drinking wine and nibbling on lobster, and which is good because I'm not winning at the poker table, so I need to win somewhere. But it was nice when they brought out Karina's little dessert because I didn't realize it was her birthday. It was just kind of a meal he put together, but fantastic to see. And see the Jets, too. I mean, Karina always cracks me up.
Yeah.
She cracked me up during dinner this time. So before dinner, though, I had like a half an hour before dinner, so wasn't enough time to get on a cash game table. So I tried California craps for the first time, Chris.
Huh.
Are you familiar with California craps? I know Jeannie used to train to be a craps dealer at Foxwoods, which is completely different because that's Connecticut craps.
Yeah, it's real craps.
It's normal craps, yes.
Yeah.
But California craps is a little different. And I knew this, but, you know, again, I haven't traveled in forever. And I don't remember them ever actually having a craps table here, so I don't know whether they added it. And the 2 years I've been there, and I just walked past it before. But I'm like, all right, I'll go play craps because that's my guilty pleasure when I can't get on the poker table. And sit down, I buy in, and points established, put my odds down, and the guy rolls a five, and I put my $10 on the come because, you know, that's how I do the – get my three numbers going, right? And the dealer's all kinds of confused after the next roll because I put 10 on top of it for odds. And he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I want odds. He's like, odds? That was a three. You lose. And I'm like, that was a three. It was a five. And then we were like, it was like Abbott and Costello, right? Before the box man finally broke us up and said, hey, the number on the die doesn't mean anything other than what color card they choose to figure out the actual number.
Oh, no.
This is how California craps work, because everything has to be a card.
Yeah.
So really, if it's blue, I mean, if it's odd, they pick the blue, and if it's even, they pick the red or whatever, either way. And then the stick man pulls a card out, and that's the actual number. So in the end all, it's all the same, I guess, right? But it was hilarious for me to watch how people do all their normal craps, superstitions.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Blowing on the dice, setting the dice. It means nothing. I actually I felt a little relieved that I didn't have to, like, you know, cause you have a little pressure there if you just pick up the dice and fling them. Because then the purists get all mad at you. So, you know, I try to set them even though I'm not setting them just so they don't get mad at me. Now I was just picking them up and flinging them because it doesn't matter, right?
Right.
These people were, like, doing all the other crazy stuff. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. But it does take away the excitement because you like to see the dice bounce off the wall and hope it comes down in the right way. And this one, you just have to – you're sitting there, a stick man waiting for them to flip over a card. It's like war. But with dice.
Yeah, it's like gratification delayed. You're sitting there and you're like, you want to react to the dice, and instead that's like another step in the process.
And if you have short attention span problems like I do, then you'll inadvertently start putting down bets when the dice come down and get excited, and the box man will be like, didn't we go over this, Mr. Long? And I'm like, fuck.
I'm leaving it in. I don't care.
That's exactly what I said there. Like, come on, I'm sorry, guys. Like, I'm going to get this eventually.
That is good.
Yeah, California craps. Try it if you... Yeah, don't try it.
It's the mental gymnastics that they have to do to play craps out there. It's terrible.
Yeah, well, it's also the human ingenuity, right? So, you know, again, this is the joke phase all the time. We could cure cancer, but nope, we're trying to find a way to play craps with cards. So.
Well, I'm glad I have my new Scott Long ringtone now, too. I'm going to take that audio clip and... Whenever you call me, it's going to say that over and over and over.
I just changed my Unsolved Mysteries this week from West Wing, finally.
Oh, jeez.
All right, so it was not my best week of play out here ever. I really don't think I was rusty, but that's kind of what you say when you don't play well, right? You try to make it something So, so whatever. I just didn't play well. So, the Omaha 8, River to Steel Wheel, Chris. Fantastic. And of course got 3/4 of the pot because I tied for the low. Right, that's always the first. Always. But that was the highlight for Omaha. Nothing else. Flamed out pretty early in that. In the horse tournament yesterday, the pleasure was playing with Lon McCarron all day. Great guy. He was at the birthday dinner the night before. We had a good time talking and talking even more during the horse for the 5-6 hours that I made it in that. Just couldn't get anything going. So got out of that. The day before there was this bounty event. You know, it was a $200 buy-in with $50 bounties, and didn't get anywhere with their team getting a bounty. But one funny story. One of the things that's great about so many people come out and playing, and what I forgot to say at the top was part of the reason we have these big crowds is one, there hasn't been any tournament series anywhere in Northern California or Reno since COVID started, right? So this is the first. Furby in the drive-in traffic, which is a big part of Thunder Valley. So that's part of the reason that the deals are so big. But part of the reason that we think that the main event is going to easily top $1 million in the prize pool, which would double the guarantee, is that there are no other tournament series going on in the country right now.
Yeah.
So for the first time ever, you know, we're going to get the L.A. crowd here. We're going to get the Vegas crowd. We're even going to get some people from the East Coast that come out here that are just looking for a big buy-in tournament. So, and on the flip side, you've got so many people that are just recreational players that have just been cooped up at home and just want to play tournaments, right? And so these daily tournaments for like $200 are perfect for them. And so there just happened to be one of those guys at my table with the bounty. He's a super nice guy. He was just having a blast talking about how it's good to play poker. Wasn't a particularly skilled player, but he was having a lot of fun playing. And that's, you know, that's great. He knew it was a bounty tournament. And so when he got knocked out, he stood up. He thanked us, rapped the table, had a good night. He's like, now, do I go to the cage to get my bounty?
Oh, no.
So we, of course, all giggled and were like, no, that's not how it works. The guy that just knocked you out, who's knocked out 97 people already in the first level, get your bounty. But it made me think, what about an interesting tournament structure where the only person that doesn't get any bounties is the guy who wins?
Well, what do you mean? Like, oh, no, you couldn't do that. How do you even do it? I mean, how would you even do it?
It's like you're holding, you buy for 200, but you know you're not going to lose 200. I think it's some kind of weird poker psychology. It's a stupid idea, I know, but it made me think. I'm like, hey, at least if I get knocked out, I get $50 back.
Yeah.
And if I win it, I don't get $50 back, so I can't win for that $8,000 on top.
There's no money on top. I guess you'd have to, yeah. Oh, man, because that $50 makes up a large part of the prize pool.
Yes.
I remember when we used to play down at Sarasota a lot, and we'd play those bounty events. When we make the final table, you get your bounty back because no one knocked you out to get to the final table.
Yep.
Which I thought was interesting because you could still get knocked out. I thought only and then the winner gets to keep his own bounty with the way it would work. But they gave you back your bounty if you made the final 10 or 9. So, but yeah, that's kind of bizarre. It's like, yeah, you do deserve a bounty because you play so bad. It's like committing suicide. So you actually did eliminate yourself.
Yeah, it's like a pity bounty.
That's yeah, exactly. That's pretty funny.
At their Antiup Tour event at the Casino 101 years ago, they had that progressive bounty, which is still my favorite bounty. So if you knock somebody out, you got their bounty, but then you got an extra bounty chip. And if somebody knocked you out, they got all of your bounties. I mean, you got paid for the bounties you knocked out, but then they got that extra bounty chip.
Yeah.
It was a lot of money if you knocked somebody out with like 6 bounties. So
yeah.
That's an interesting strategy as well, too. But anyway, all right. So the salt bounty is probably not going to work out. That's all right. That's all right. Anyway, plenty of other good
stuff. It's okay.
And then yesterday, this is the last thing before we move on. One of the longest days of poker I remember myself playing. Now, I played long sessions of cash, but cash I think is different because you're playing one discipline. You can get up and go to the restroom or go back to the room and if you're cold and get a jacket or whatever, and you know you're not missing out on anything, right? Whereas tournaments, if you get up and do any of that, you're missing blinds and particularly in a horse event, you're missing antes and stuff like that. So you're really chained to your seat in tournaments for the most part, I think, right? Mm-hmm. So I started in the morning with the horse, and the same thing happened with the Omaha. I was like the 12:30 p.m., and the horse and the Omaha both started at 10 a.m., and at 12:30 was the Monolith satellite. 110, 1 in 5 players make it, which is a great opportunity to get into a big, big money field, right? And so it was getting close to the beginning of the model of the satellite with the Omaha, and I was trying to make a decision. If you get knocked out, do you re-enter the Omaha? And the same thing happened with the horse. Do you re-enter the horse? Or do you late reg for the Monolith? And there was another guy at my table yesterday in the horse. He was trying to think out the same thing. And I told him, I'm like, hey, if we re-enter the horse, we're putting down $200 for 10 big blinds in a limit game. And so he's like, I think I'm doing the Monolith. The guy said, no, I was going to do the Monolith too. So that's what happened yesterday. I unfortunately got knocked out of the horse. I was able to enter the Monolith in the last minute of reg. So I think it was like level 5 or 6.
Wow.
So we sat down in a brand new table, which was nice, and quickly got ace king. Won the first pot, got ace king again, got a guy to commit almost an entire stack. So I doubled up almost right off the bat, which is fantastic when you're that quote unquote short stacked in a satellite like that.
Yeah, satellite.
And then there was a hand with 4 people all in. Unfortunately, there weren't 4 all in when it got to me, so I had to make a decision before then. There were 2 all ins when it got to me, and I had 7-8 suited, which normally I'd probably call one in this kind of situation. And if there's 4, I definitely would have called. And of course, I would have hit trips and knocked out 4 people right there.
Oh, man.
Would have been able to go to the room and just wait for them to let me know that I got my seat, but that didn't happen. I had enough chips. But it was very interesting watching. I always like these satellites, particularly these 1 in 5s, watching the strategy. So, we ended up with 70-some players. 15 players got a seat, and 16 player got 270 in cash or whatever, which for me is a good day at the office because obviously I didn't win anything in the Monolith. Right?
Yeah,
probably should have gone out and got the 275. But we were getting down to, I don't know, 25 players left, so we had 9 to go. And almost everybody at the table had fewer than 10 big blinds, Chris.
Whoa.
Now, I know we talk on the show, I'm a little bit more liberal about, you know, I start to thinking about shoving at 20 big blinds, but definitely at 15 big blinds, right?
Yeah.
10 big blinds is like super old school at this point. But even at 10 big blinds, people were limping, they were min-raising, and I was just looking at them like, you don't understand this strategy at all, do you?
Wow.
And, of course, they were hitting hands, and I was getting frustrated because I was playing it right. But so you have that everyone. But then you got down to the end, and I looked the button pass because the blinds were getting very fast at that point because we were playing hand-to-hand. So every time you finished a hand, they rolled 2 minutes off, which is a new TDA rule, right? And in the 10-minute limit or 10-minute level tournament, 5 hands, and you're up to another level at this point, which was outrageous. And so this is when you have to do the math, right? And again, I flamed out in math in 11th grade, but I got enough that it gets me through in poker. And, you know, so I was doing the math on my stack, and I'm like, I need to double up one more time to make it through the blinds. Because if you make it through the blinds, now you've got like 5, 6, 7 hands where somebody else can bust out, right? That's the goal, right? Because you don't get any extra for having the most chips. You just have to get the seat, right? So I'm like, all right, I got to pick a hand here. I'm going to have to double up. And, of course, I got lucky. I got kings, which always makes it easier, right? Pushed in, doubled up. And then I'm like, all right, good. I'm good to go. And then the next lap through, I realized because the blinds accelerated so much, I had to do it again. Shoved all in, got aces. I mean, I shoved with aces. Held up. I'm like, that's fantastic. And then so the money bubble burst. So the guy now the next person now is going to get the money. And once again, aces. I can't believe this. It never in a great tournament, right? In a satellite's when I get these cards.
Yeah.
And shove with the aces, and a guy called me with eights, and I knocked him out on the money bubble. But he's laughing now because he has $270, and I've got nothing but 6 hours of misery. So this work yesterday was yesterday's satellite and today's satellite. You have to play that night's flight. So last night when we got our seats, we had to play that flight. We didn't get to come back tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
and it ended after the monolith had started. And again, I was playing horse at 10 a.m. And one of the things that they're due for COVID here is you can't eat in the room. So I did not have a bite of food, Chris, into the first break in the monolith at 5:30 p.m.
Oh, man.
And I wolfed down a hot dog and went back. And then eventually, like I said, I flamed out. But that was a long day of being stuck there at the table, not being able to do anything. But it was fun. It was really fun. So
you asked for this, just to remind you. Hey, why don't you let me read the COVID updates to give your voice a rest there? Feel good about that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. The World Series of Poker has clarified its new Rule 115, which says players who come into contact with a COVID-infected person can be removed from the tournament. WSOP has clarified that if the player is vaccinated and is asymptomatic, they will remain in the tournament. You want to talk about that first, or you want to just move on to the next one?
Yeah, it's going to be both, and we'll talk about both.
Okay, so if you want to play poker at Harrah's New Orleans, you'll need to be fully vaccinated, effective immediately. Harrah's, in a state where it has low vaccination rates and surging COVID cases, is the first casino in the United States to require vaccinations for patrons. So, one of the things I'm curious about is, how will they know at the World Series that you've been in contact with a COVID-infected person?
I'm going to assume it's going to have to be somebody, a COVID-infected person at the table, because that's really the only reason, you're right, that I can think they could figure out. But there's a lot of problems with this rule, which some of them have debated extensively online. Other ones we talked through yesterday or this week while we've been out here about this. But the reason I paired these two up is because I think the solution to the first is the second one. And I know there are people out there that don't want to hear this, but not at all surprised that Harrah's New Orleans went this way. I mean, we think things are bad in Florida. Things in Louisiana are twice as bad. We're, literally it was like 35% vaccination rate there at some point. You know, hospitals are so full that they're moving people to Texas. So it doesn't surprise me that there's going to be a casino somewhere that went to this length. We have a number of them that have already mandated vaccinations for their employees. This is the first one to go with patrons, and I'm sure it's not going to be the last. What's interesting about this, it's the same ownership of the World Series, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I was talking to a couple of tournament directors this week about when we were talking about this is there's a couple of things going on. One, I haven't seen an article about it, but I've talked to enough people to know that the World Series of Poker, apparently, again, I don't have any proof other than just a number of people confirming this, are incredibly short on dealer hirings right now.
Yeah.
I've heard they 100. I've heard anywhere they have anywhere from 200 to 600 right now. So best case scenario, if my sources are correct, they have barely half as many dealers as they need a month before cards go in the air. And worst case scenario, they are dead in the water. Right.
Yeah.
So you got that going on. And it seems to me that a solution here is to do the Harrah's New Orleans and just say, hey, this year only, or at least I don't know if you say this year only, but you want to make sure it's you say, hey, you know, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to be vaccinated to play the World Series this year. Now, if you do that, now it's a little bit – those of us who are double vaxxed or vaccinated if you have the J&J will feel a little more comfortable plunking down our money at the World Series. Because right now, even with the clarification in the rule, I got to say I'm not comfortable buying into a World Series event. Because, I mean, we've seen and now I know the breakthrough cases are very minuscule. They've been less than 1%. I will also say six of my vaccinated friends in the past week have had a breakthrough case. So I imagine those stats are going to change here pretty quickly. Only one of them had any symptoms really at all. So they would still, in this scenario, they would still be able to play. But we're finding the helplessness. And I think if you go back to a couple episodes, and I know we pissed some people off about this, about our statement on it, but really it's a sense of helplessness from some of us, right? You know, we've done everything we can, and now we're continuing to be punished. And so if I'm going to buy in, even at a $500 tournament at the World Series, knowing that if the guy at the table next to me gets COVID And then I happen to get it from him, and I have a mild cough that I'm going to be eliminated from the tournament. Yeah. I think I'm going to sell that $500, or that $1,500, or that $100,000, right? I'm not going to gamble with that. I just can't. And so if it's fully vaccinated, if you have that same policy, then that's a gamble I might take, because I am far less worried about contracting COVID when everybody in the room is vaccinated, right? Yeah, so now that seems a little draconian, and it was interesting. One of the tournament directors, I don't think draconian, but was skeptical of this. The other one was a little bit open to it. I'm like, it kind of solves the other problem, right? So, I mean, what happens if the World Series starts next month and they are still completely short on dealers? And hopefully they're not. Hopefully they'll get staffed up where they need to be. But if they are short, isn't this the solution to that problem too?
Yeah, smaller fields.
Smaller fields. And you no longer have this anger over the vaxxed people worried about getting removed from the tournament. And you can more manage the crowds. You know, you're probably still going to hit these guarantees. I could be wrong, though. I mean, that might be a consideration. And certainly there's a financial consideration, because, you know, you've got a budget for the event, so, you know, reduced fields. But if you go in, there's this literally guns blazing, and you can't provide the product and the service that you've advertised, is that not a worse scenario, right? I mean, it almost seems like this is a godsend to them as the potential of controlling what could be a really chaotic series of not being able to get people in events or give them the service they want. And then, you know, the Twitter storm when some double vax person gets removed because the guy next to him got COVID, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure maybe these discussions are going on. I haven't seen it anywhere publicly. And if I was a World Series poker, I wouldn't be sharing it publicly. But very interesting. Because I got to say right now, I mean, there's not a whole lot of people happy about this. Vaxxed, anti-vaxxed, not vaxxed, wears a mask, doesn't wear a mask. Nobody's happy with this right now. And that's not a good scenario for any kind of event when everybody's upset at you, right?
Well, imagine the havoc that could be wreaked if you're in a multi-day tournament and you've played at 15 different tables over the course of 1 or 2 days, and then you've got it. Now, every one of those players who is sitting at the table next to you or with you are affected by this, and they're all removed from the field. What are they going to do, contact tracing and use the camera in the sky to determine the players who were with this guy? Or, I mean, that just sounds like a nightmare waiting to happen.
Yeah, I honestly don't know how you do it. There's probably a way to do it. I don't know off the top of my head. I can't imagine. And I don't know what their length of contact tracing to the point that they would remove you from the tournament is. They have to have some sort of rules. I mean, their clarification didn't go that in depth, which I think is a reasonable question, right? So, and any of us have been to the World Series, and most of our listeners have been out there at some point. I mean, just looking at that field of those tables, the number of tables, the number of people, you know, I'm really appreciative that they're trying to put it on. I think it was smart to move it to the fall. At the time, we obviously didn't know about Delta. We thought we had this kind of under control, and now we clearly don't have it under control at all. And there was some chatter at my tables this week about whether it's going to be completely canceled.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
At this point, I would not be terribly surprised because, I mean, one, you have to assume that this could be end up being a super spreader event with that many people, which is not good. And even if it's not, you're going to get some bad press when you have to tell a fully vaxxed person that, hey, you're out of this tournament. Nope, you're not getting any money back. Sorry.
Yeah, and you did nothing wrong.
You just happened to be next to somebody who did.
Yeah,
and
that's just not
right. And I'm not assuming that person did anything wrong either. I mean, you know.
Right, but I mean, you didn't do anything. You didn't, you know what I mean? You didn't even catch it, but you're out of the tournament. You don't get your money back. Thanks. It's not right.
It would be slightly better if they just gave you your buy-in back. And there's still going to be some people upset, I mean, depending on how deep you are in the tournament. But to DQ you and not give you even your buy-in back, that's a big... big step. And I mean, we've already seen Frank Casella said he's probably not going to play unless it's fully vaxxed. Chris Moneymaker's already said he's not playing because he doesn't want to get his kids sick. And who knows how many other big names are going to sit this out this year. And not even big names. That's not even the big thing. It's the smaller names, the people like us, right?
Yeah.
That just usually get on the plane and go out there and play a couple events. And, you know, it's expensive to fly out there, get a hotel, food and that, and then plus buy into the tournament. And so that's the other risk. It's not just a $500 or $1,000 or $1,500 buy-in. It's flying out there and having your World Series ended because somebody in your close proximity got COVID.
Yeah.
I cannot recommend anybody do that. You know, everybody gets to make their own choices, and the listeners want to go out and throw those dice in a non-California craps game. Go for it and have fun. But it's not a risk I want to take. And if I have people ask me their advice, I would say, nope, take this year off, and hopefully we'll get everything under control next year and get back to normal. So,
all right.
It's going to be a crazy month.
Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be wild.
All right, speaking of the World Series, Eric Seidel has won his ninth World Series of Poker Bracelet, winning the $10,000 high roller event and the WSOP Summer Online Series. The bracelet moves Seidel into a tie for third most in history with Johnny Moss, one behind Doyle Brunson, Phil Ivey, and Johnny Chan, and six behind the all-time leader, Phil Hellmuth, who still hasn't shown up for that tournament yet.
Wow. Yeah, it's funny. When I saw that on the news item, I was like, what? And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot the Summer Online Series is going on. You know,
yeah, partly that's my fault. I'm one of these people that just doesn't think the online series rates as well as the live one. So I don't pay a lot of attention to the news when I'm putting together the show notes on online things like this. So part of my problem. But there are a lot of articles about Eric Seidel and you know, whether you think this is a legit bracelet or not, the World Series does. So it's a legit news item. And it's good to see an old timer like that still playing. Wow, I wish I could interview him and ask him how he feels.
That's why I was really disappointed, because all you did was like send me a quick email like, I got a Seidel item on. I'm like, oh, maybe Seidel showed up at the Worlds and he's going to ask him about the paltry fields that have people sitting on the ground, you know, and see. But that wasn't what it was. I was so disappointed when it was like he won his ninth bracelet. Wah, wah.
Sorry, man. All right, here's this week update on poker room reopenings. The Florida Calder Casino has reopened its poker room. We have 266 reopened poker rooms in the United States. And remember to go to the website, get on the e-blast, all that other stuff, blah, blah, blah. The one thing about this is not a reopen from a COVID room. This is a room that closed down long before COVID, and they decided to reopen. So that's always a really good sign for us, I think.
Yeah.
Rooms that weren't shut down for COVID, but were shut down for other reasons are coming back, because still not sure about these last 70, 80 rooms that I keep checking in with every day. You know, when poker's no longer on the casino website, it makes me wonder whether they're coming back at all. So this is good news. We like to see rooms that were not closed during COVID come back.
All right, Annie updates. The Annie and Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th every month. Rotate disciplines with the main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Antiup Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call to four questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. You can buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup Pokercast, or Antiup Poker Tour logos. If you have a Hand of the Week, Listener Spotlight, a Core of the Floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Antiup Fans group on Facebook. We got a new O'Malley's move today. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are seated in a $2, $5 no-limit hold'em casino cash game. The game is eight-handed and has been tighter than your typical game at these stakes. There's one player who is trying to be the table captain, but his skill level does not match his ego. When things don't go his way, he either educates players when they make certain moves he disagrees with, or feels the need to explain why he did a certain move a certain way when he's caught bluffing or sucks out. He sits with around 800 and will be the villain. The blinds post, it's folded to an MP who limps. The villain is in the hijack with 800, up 300. He raises to $30, which is the table standard. We can assume this is a good starting hand. this particular player tends to call with a wide range, but raise with a much narrower range. It's folded to us on the button with 1100, up 600, and the 9 of spades, 9 of hearts. I think there are two valid options here. A raise is certainly justifiable, but a call is as well. Raising would do a little more to define the range of the opponent, but we might bloat the pot or even get priced out of it. Since we have position here, I like a call to see what he does on the flop. We make the call, the blinds and the limper fold, and we go to a flop. There's roughly $70 in the pot, and it comes down the jack of spades, seven of spades, four of hearts. Our opponent leads out for $40. I don't mind this flop. There is a chance we are up against an overpair, maybe even jacks, but we still have second pair with some backdoor draws. I'm not ready to give this up just yet. We call. There's now 150 in the pot, and the turn is the six of hearts. Our opponent thinks for a while and then checks. Let's keep the pot manageable. We check back. The pot is the same, 150, and the river is the tray of clubs. Our opponent once again thinks briefly and then bets 200. Why so much? What's the move?
It's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands of situations, a podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If anyone wants something from us in the past year, you get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. And our good friend Matt from Down Under is back. I think he's from Down Under or New Zealand or one of those places that's down under us. But All right. He is in a nickel dime PLO 6 max game online, Chris. And he sits with $10.48. And I will say I sat out the PLO on Tuesday. I'm sitting at the Big O today. So in respect to my business partner who does not like these games.
Thank you.
I didn't want to charge you half for games that you don't like.
Much appreciated.
All right. So the Under the Gun, who started with $10.08, so we have him slightly covered, makes it 35 cents to go. Middle position player that we have covered in the cutoff, who we have covered call, the button folds, and we are in the small blind, Chris, with the ace of diamonds, queen of diamonds, jack of spades, 10 of hearts.
Well, that's a nice hand.
And remember, this is PLO, so.
Yeah, it's PLO. So, I mean, I like this hand. I don't like being out of position in PLO. So I'm just going to do a flat call it and see how that flop comes and then see if we can't make the nut some way.
Yeah, there's two lines of thoughts here. I mean, one, folding is not an option, obviously. So the two lines are calling, which I like because one, it disguises the strength of your hand, and we are out of position, as you mentioned. The other one, obviously, is raising because this is definitely a raising hand. We've got, four of the five Broadway cards in our hand, one suited. So this is a hand that has a lot of big flop potential. And again, in Omaha, you want to build the pot before you get there. So, you know, if this flop comes with three diamonds, you know, we're not going to get much value out of this. So that would be the argument for popping it. I generally play a little bit more conservatively. So that's what I would do is go ahead and wrap the table here and spring a trap later on.
Cool.
But if you want to raise, that's fine, too. It was already raised, so you have to re-raise it again. So that's the only thing is you're going to get. You don't want to get too pot committed here without knowing where your hand is going is the other problem. So, and I think you have to get that under gun. Obviously, always have to get the under gun somewhat credit for having a hand too, right? So, yeah. If they're sitting on two aces, that's not great for your hand, and then they're going to repop it again. And this is not a hand that I want to see three or four bets for. But so another reason I think to slyly call here and see a flop.
All right.
All right, here it says, I consider popping it, but being largely out of position, I'm worried the pot could get out of hand without having a massive hand yet. Hey, somebody just said that. recent experience has me skeptical in the worst starting position. It should be. You should always be skeptical in the worst starting position, particularly in Omaha, because it's a very difficult game to play out of position. So, smart move. All right, so he calls. Big blind folds.
Okay.
Flop is the tray of diamonds. King of diamonds, queen of clubs, the pot's $1.39, and we are first to act.
Well, Scott mentioned how you don't want to come three diamonds because you're probably not going to make a lot of money. In this case, we got the nut flush draw. We got all kinds of Broadway draws. We got tons and tons and tons of outs to hit our nut hands. And, of course, we have a pair. So I would like to bet here. And since there's so many people in the field, you know, I'd like to thin the field. I'd like to at least try to get them to narrow it down to at least one player. So I'm probably going to bet pot or close to it.
Yeah, definitely. You definitely have to bet here. I mean, again, as we mentioned, this is when you have to get your money in. We have the whole world here to come. So I'm not too worried about any kind of heat here. So got to bet. And I guess it's trying to find the right bet here. A pot limit, people usually default to pot, which is kind of a mistake. In this case, I don't think it's a mistake, but I would say somewhere in the dollar to pot range.
Yeah.
So be fine. All right, our hero says, well, I've hit a fairly solid flop for my hand. Nut flush draw gives me four different cards. Give me the straight, not straight. I think I can go either way. A check could induce a bet, particularly from the pre-flop raiser. That said, I've seen these checked around. Yeah, I'm not taking the chance of getting checked around. Reasonably sure that that guy's going to bet. I mean, a king and queen on board. I mean, what does he have that he's raising there that doesn't excite him? But I definitely don't want to take the chance here because if you hit that hand, and we have a lot of outs to hit that hand,
yeah,
the action's going to dry up real quick. So yeah, you got to take control of this hand. All right, our hero does the right thing. Bets $1.04, right in the middle of our range.
Yeah.
At the end of the gun, who raised, folds. Middle position calls, and the cutoff raises to 571.
Okay, so we started with like $10. So I can't imagine a card that comes on the turn that isn't a pair that's going to make me want to fold. So unless the board were to pair on the turn, I'd be getting it all in anyway. So I might as well get it all in now and try to get one of these guys out and go head-to-head with the guy who probably popped a set and see if I can get my hand in. I can't see just calling, because on the turn, if it comes like a, you know, a six of hearts, you know, you're not going anywhere with all those nut outs. So you might as well just get it in now. I can't see just calling here.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this isn't the advice I gave Matt, but I think I'm on Team Chris here. The other thing, too, is if the board pairs, now we get spooked, right? Now we have an opportunity to fold, which may be the right thing, but I think it's going to be too easy to get us to fold there when we have so many outs for a river card that's going to make our hand. So at this point, I mean, we've already put $1.39 of our 10, so we're down to $9. We're being asked to call 571. Might as well just shove here.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Our hero says, this screams something big. I have a queen, so unless they have the case queens of spades, it's probably king of spades. That said, I have a nut flush draw plus any ace, jack, 10, or 9. Give me a nut straight. So I'm asking myself if the move is to jam or flat, since A, my hand has a lot to gain from hitting one of my draws, and B, the fact that the middle position player is still left, I question the likelihood of the middle position calling, should I jam? Now, I think that's a good point, actually. So, and, you know, if you want to bring that other player in, I can see how you can call here, and maybe it's a stop and go where you shove on the next card no matter what, right? Maybe that's the way to go to get that other person in, because if you do hit your hand, it's a nut hand. And so you might make more money that way. So yeah, I guess I kind of dismissed that on my initial analysis, and maybe that's the way to go. Call and who knows, maybe this middle position player was setting a trap as well too. So you might still get it all in, but that might be a better way of going, because I kind of want that guy's money with my draw. It's different if I had a different draw, but we have multiple cards to give us the nuts, right?
Well, the thing I was wondering about is there was a way, like, for another queen to give us the victory if we can narrow it down against someone else. Like, I'm just trying to figure out, if we got heads up, could the queens hold up? Could the guy be doing the same thing, like shoving with a draw? Or, you know, maybe he's got top pair with a draw, a redraw, and we could hit a third queen to beat him. You know, so I was just thinking that it always increases your odds of winning by eliminating somebody. Now, it doesn't increase the money you'll win if you eliminate someone, but I think I can go either way on that. I still like a shove, I think.
All right, let's see what happens. Our hero eventually decides to call, hoping for a call from the middle position player. Sadly, they fold. Okay, well,
Yeah. So now we kind of wish that we would have shoved, but
yeah.
Let's see what that turn is. And if it's not a paired board, then we're good to go. All right. The turn is the seven of diamonds. So our board now is the tray of diamonds, king of diamonds, queen of clubs, seven of diamonds. Pretty good card. And we are first deck.
Well, it's interesting. If that guy seemed like he really wanted to bet, you know, and I'd probably check. If the guy had a set and now you'd bet, he's going to call anyway because he's going to want to fill up. He's not going to want to give up a set at the turn. So I think no matter what you do, if you check, you're losing a chance to get all the money in, now that you've made your hand. So if you check here and then he hits the, you know, I mean, if you bet, you might get a set to fold that would have paired the board. At the same time, if you bet, you might, you know, get him to call and then, you know, he might hit his hand on the end. He might not. Who knows? But I think you have to bet here. If he checks behind and then the river is just a blank and then you bet, he could get away with just checking a set, you know. So I feel like you have to bet now.
Yeah, this guy's not going anywhere. I mean, we're assuming he has a set. And if he doesn't have a set, then he's playing this very strongly. And so when we shove here, he's got to assume that we have the flush. But he also has outs to that boat, and I don't think he's going anywhere. I would rather not. If I check here, he could easily check behind and boat up, and then we lose the hand. I would rather make him pay to beat us here. So I'm going to go ahead and shove. That's what I was going to do on any non-paired board anyhow. So nothing changed me, so I'm shoving.
Yeah.
All right, here it says, I don't think it matters much here. Money is getting in one way or the other. Given their flop jam, I really can't see how they could just check behind. I check, they jam, and we call. Now, all right, so that's the one thing I did say is I can see how they would check behind, and that would have been really dangerous, which is the reason we should have shoved. As it turns out, we got the result that we were hoping for anyhow, but it's there, an unnecessary risk for our hand.
Yeah.
All right, so the villain turns over the ace of spades, six of diamonds, tray of hearts, for bottom trips. The river is the seven of clubs, so the board pairs, and our villain wins. He says, my post-hand questions, is the pre-flop move the right move? Do we keep the pot low to avoid overcommitting without seeing a flop? Or do we build a pot when we hit big? I think we answered that. I think you could have gone both ways, but...
Well, here's the deal. If you did raise, you might have gotten that hand the full preflop. Again, it's hindsight and whatever, but, you know, ace, six, tray, when the ace isn't suited to anything, it might fold if you now pop it to, you know, whatever you could pop it to at the time, $3 or something. So, you know, you get the crappy hands out, you know, and then you know what you're up against. A lot of times you're playing with your hands face up at that point, but so what? But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. And something else you said earlier, son. I think you said three of hearts, but I don't know what that other. It sounded like you said that three. Okay, tray of clubs. Okay, so yeah, I would say I don't mind the limp, but if you're trying to figure a different way to play this, like we always try to do on Hand of the Week, then yeah, raising might have gotten that ace out. Who knows?
Yeah, that's kind of results oriented, but yeah, you're right. And I don't know if it would have got it out. I mean, this guy already called a raise from an under the gun player with his hand, which is not a great Omaha high low, maybe, but not Omaha high.
Right.
Because you're right, ace isn't suited. That ace isn't suited. This hand is really crap because what are you trying for? You're trying for a really weak straight or a really weak set.
Yeah. Or a stupid wheel.
Yeah. Well, that's again a really weak straight.
Yeah.
So, this is a hand, I mean, if I was this guy, I would have thrown this hand in the muck. So he called a raise from under the gun, which is really bad. And so if we would have raised two, I would have been curious whether he would have called. If he would have called, I want this guy in my game every day, so even though he beat me here.
Yeah.
So, but again, that's results oriented. We gave you two options there. I mean, you took one, and I think it was fine. You know, we just didn't get the result we wanted. His second question, given the outs we have on the flop, given we hit the flop so hard, is leading out to our future nut hands outweigh the need to check to the pre-flop better? I think I made a case consistently on that. You know, you need to bet when you're on the common Omaha or you're not going to get paid off. So,
yeah, right.
And he says, after all, do we want to build a pot? There's always a chance it could check around or we're really going to get called if we check raise. Are we forced to just check call on the flop? All right, same answer, really. And then the final one, you both talk about the push-pull factor. Given the action on the flop, we bet, see a call, and then a raise. Is the only action here to call? Is the third player ever calling if we jam? Are they ever playing if we just call? Well, I mean, obviously he got out of the way even with our call, so the jam wasn't
right.
gonna
right.
Change anything. But again, you know, Omaha, it's a game of outs, so you know, it's not just about whether players have two pair or a set right now. It's whether they have straight or flush draws, and you know, we had all the nut draws in our hand, but that doesn't mean they could have had other flush draws. I mean, I would really not want to go to war on this particular board with the queen high flush draw, but that doesn't mean other players wouldn't. I mean, we had a player here that played what I consider a pretty crappy starting hand for to a race. So you never know if people are going to play. So, yeah, I think you're right in wanting to pull that other player in with our draw. And then, of course, we hit it too, which is fantastic, right? It just the river didn't cooperate with us. But we wanted that other player in. And especially so when that turn came. So I definitely think you wanted to pull him in there.
Yeah, especially if, like, the thing about the other person had less than the cutoff from my notes here, but if it was like the under the gun player who had more money, then you might have gotten some more money back had you lost to one, but you would have beaten the other, you know. But that person probably had a set too, who knows, maybe a set of sixes or something. But yeah, this is why Omaha is such a tough game to play, and all the money usually gets made on the turn. This is when all the big decisions are, and you know, that flop gets you in and the turn gets you to bet, and then the most money you can get in on the turn is usually the most effective play when it comes to something like this. It's a shame though, it's a shame that the board paired and it was just a crappy hand. You know, we talk about being results oriented, but really, if I would have played it the way he played it, I would not have raised pre-flop, but some people would. I mean, that's a pretty decent hand. And it might have thinned the field, and it might have gotten this guy out, and then who knows? But who knows, because you may not have won with this hand anyway. You still might have gotten someone else to stick around. If you're heads up, some people are more likely to stick around with a smaller set or something, and so you still don't know how it would have come out.
Right. Yep.
All right, Matt, thanks for the hand. Appreciate it. Scott, stay safe. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Sean Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.